Welcome to In the Loop. This is Kristen. I need to stop this before it plays the next one. Okay. It is December 14th, 2005, and you are listening to In the Loop here on freeradiosaic.org. And thank you for listening. We're broadcasting from the 13th floor of the Michigan building of the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, the school with way too fucking many prepositions in its name. I have Emily from the show that you were just listening to. Hopefully you were listening to it. If not, you should when it comes back on the air after break. Called The Tupperware Party. Has some very good songs on it. This is the news, pop culture, me bitching or whatever show. And so with that, it was really sad this weekend. I was very sad. On Saturday, Richard Pryor died, a fantastic comedian. And as I was watching CNN, I was thinking, like, I actually remember the announcement of him getting MS. And I was like 7, I think. Yeah, because he got diagnosed in 86. So I was 7. And I remembered that. So that was just odd. But I'm going to play a clip after I read this article, which was courtesy of CNN. Well, courtesy of a couple of other places on the web before I found it. So, Richard Pryor. Just days after his 65th birthday, groundbreaking comedian Richard Pryor died Saturday of a heart attack. Pryor, who had been ill with multiple sclerosis, died at Encino Hospital near Los Angeles at 7:58 a.m. Pacific time. Jennifer Lee Pryor tried to revive him at home before paramedics arrived and took him to the hospital, she said. He enjoyed life right up until the end, she said, adding that Pryor had been laughing a lot and was in good spirits in the 2 weeks preceding his death. At the end, there was a smile on his face. In addition to his multiple sclerosis diagnosis in 1986, he suffered a massive heart attack and underwent triple bypass surgery in 1990. Pryor was known for his raunchy stand-up comedy and a variety of acting roles, including in Superman III, The Toy, and Harlem Nights, in which he starred with his comedic predecessor, Red Fox, and his heir apparent, Eddie Murphy. Pryor was arguably the biggest name in stand-up comedy during the 1970s, earning Grammy Awards for his comedy albums, back when comedy albums were big. My editorial note. In addition to appearances in almost 40 films, Pryor also was part of the team that created the script for the Mel Brooks comedy Blazing Saddles. He also directed himself in a semi-autobiographical film, Jojo Dancer, Your Life is Calling, in the mid-80s, a film he says refused to be written as a comedy. But despite his achievements on the screen and on stage, Pryor is often remembered for seriously burning over half his body while freebasing cocaine, an incident he later dubbed a suicide attempt. As his disease became more and more debilitating, Pryor refused to abandon his career. He continued to do stand-up sitting down. Many have called it remarkable that he was so determined to keep performing despite his illness. Pryor was married 7 times to 5 different women and has 7 children, Renee, Richard Jr., Elizabeth, Stephen Michael, that's one name, Stephen Michael, Kelsey, Franklin, and Rain. Rain is also an actress. So here we have a bit off of Richard Pryor's comedy album, Is It Something I Said? And the name of it is called Eulogy.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the world-famous Latin Casino proudly presents the star of our show, Mr. Richard Pryor.
We are gathered here today on this sorrowful occasion to say goodbye to the dearly departed. He was dearly and he has departed. Thus, that's why we call him the dearly departed. In other words, the nigga dead. As you can see him laying here, I've been here 3 days, the boy ain't moved a muscle. So I know the nigga dead. And it seemed that death was quite a surprise to his ass. Didn't think you was ever gonna die, did you, nigga? I told you about fucking around what was gonna happen. However, he faced the ultimate test. As each man and woman must eventually face the ultimate test. And the ultimate test is, let me repeat that. The ultimate test is whether or not you can survive death. That's the ultimate test for your ass, ain't it? So far, don't nobody we know have passed the ultimate test. Least of all this nigga laying here. Because this boy wasn't shit, I'm gonna tell you that right off. I saw him kicking his mama's ass over there on 47th Street. And if you think we gonna bury you with them diamonds and shit on, you got another thing coming. I'd like to introduce the boy's woman, whole bitch. I don't know what she was, huh? She's laying over there in the boot. What? Say, girl, what you doing? Well, don't sell no pussy in here. If you do, I want to cut. Shit. Your fault, the nigga dead. You'd have been home when you were supposed to be. He wouldn't have been up in the hotel fucking that faggot. Boy's husband came home, caught him fucking, shot the nigga in the ass on the downstroke. And if there is a God or heaven, we don't want this nigga up there with us. Can I get an amen?
And again, that was Eulogy off of Richard Pryor's album, Is It Something I Said?, which you can download part of it on iTunes, but otherwise go to your local record shop and buy it on CD. I wonder at what point people are like not going to know what record means. And people, when people say like record shop or like, hey, spin that disc, or like they're just not gonna have any idea. That's interesting. No, it's not. Okay. I'm going to play this next song. Again, that was Richard Pryor, who died this last weekend at 65, only a few days after his, or a few weeks after his 65th birthday. And if doing a moment of silence wasn't somehow a little strange on radio, I'm going to play this next song by Clarence Carter. And there's really no way for me to segue.
Christmas or happy holidays? A Christmas tree or a holiday
tree? That's still playing. Okay. Just pretend that you didn't hear that last part. And at this point, I'm talking to everybody who's getting the podcast because no one else is listening, I don't think. I have like 5 users, including me twice, on the homepage, freeradiosaic.org. Go and listen. And 2 users online. And again, I'm that twice. I'm that on my laptop and I'm that on the main computer. So yay. But thank you, podcasters. If you like me. Okay. So that was Backdoor Santa, which I downloaded off of iTunes this earlier today, by Clarence Carter, off of R&B Christmas Volume 4. And I just like that. I partially just like the name because it's really funny. Because Backdoor Santa. Because I hate Christmas right now. I really, really hate it. I had a therapy session today. And I was talking about going home for Christmas, and it kind of caused a panic attack. So I'm like, I'm not going home now. No, I'm not going home. No. When like 10 minutes earlier, I'd been, oh yeah, I'm going home. So I was trying to find stuff that was like anti-Christmas, but speaking of anti-Christmas, we're going to get to that later on in the show. That's what we covered last week, mainly. On Tuesday, on Monday, Sunday, earlier this week, there was some people are using the phrase execution, lethal injection, but I've been reading this book, which I swear to God is the best book in the world, and everyone should either listen to the audio tape or go and buy it and read it, called Don't Think of an Elephant. And it's about framing issues, or framing, you can frame just about anything and try to reap its benefits. And it just talks about how the power of words affects how you think of a problem or an issue, such as tax relief. By saying tax relief, you imply that taxes are something that are burdens on you. And these people who are offering tax relief are going to release you of that burden and take some of that weight off of you, while thinking of taxes as a membership to living in the country or paying for the infrastructure that enables you to live and work and et cetera. And I have better examples when I wasn't talking into a microphone. It's slightly different. And so by using that phrase, tax relief, you imply a certain, that's a frame on the issue of taxes and tax cuts and et cetera. And so during Stanley Tookie Williams, his execution, or as at least the guys on Morning Sedition, and they were calling it, and then I've been thinking about it, you know, instead of saying they're his execution, you can say it's state-sanctioned murder or government-authorized murder. So Stanley Tookie Williams, he was a founding member of the Crips. And again, he was executed, this is shortly after, I believe, our 1,000th prisoner was executed just a week or so ago. And this was in California, and it was a well-publicized case. And Rita Cosby from MSNBC was a witness, which, if there's any person who I don't want to see in my last moments on Earth, and especially here, it's Rita Cosby. Because she's on the list. And I couldn't. I heard that on MSNBC. She's like, I'm going to be a witness for the execution. I'm like, So, anyways, this happened at 12:01 or so. Or he was scheduled to die at 12:01 Pacific Standard Time that night. And I was following it for most of the night until the Supreme Court turned in their go ahead and kill him piece of paper. Their refusal to do a stay, an execution. So, because, and I know that, like, with Richard Pryor dying, and here's another, you know, black man who died, this time, you know, from slightly different causes. It's a little downer of a show, but I hate Christmas at the moment, so deal. I'm going to read this article from the San Francisco Chronicle. Chronicle rhymes with article, kind of, by Kevin Fagan, who was a witness, hopefully he didn't have to sit next to Rita Cosby, for Stanley Tookie Williams' execution. And it's a very interesting story, or intriguing story, because of the difficulties. And I don't know. I'm going to read it for you, because that's what radio is about. If I just read it and didn't read it out loud, then there wouldn't be anything to talk about. Excuse me. All right, Kevin Fagan of the San Francisco Chronicle, from Wednesday today, December 14th. It took 36 agonizing minutes to get to the defining moment of Stanley Tookie Williams' execution by lethal injection early Tuesday. And when it came, it shot through the stuffy, crowded witness room like lightning. Williams lay dead, strapped to his gurney. It was 12:35. The prison guards had just ordered the 39 witnesses to leave, and the first to go were three friends Williams had asked to watch his final moments. It was so quiet that when one man jangled his pocket change, it echoed off the walls. Then, just as they crossed the doorway to the chilly outdoors, the three whipped their heads back and screamed in unison, "The state of California just killed an innocent man." Across the room sat Laura Owens, stepmother of one of the murder victims, and the stone face she'd wore for the entire execution dissolved. Her eyes filled with horror, and she burst into tears, pressing a tissue to her face. And there it was, the twin emotions enveloping the execution of the 12th man put to death by California since capital punishment was revived in 1992 after a quarter century hiatus. On one side were the furious supporters of Williams, 51, who co-founded the Crips gang in early 1970, but later renounced violence while in prison and wrote influential books advocating peace. On the other was the trail of survivors left grieving for the four people he was convicted of shotgunning to death in 1979 in Southern California. The two sides never came to a meeting of the minds, not even in the end. The dramatics seemed far from anybody's mind when the execution began precisely at 11:59 p.m. Monday. The oval door of the death chamber popped open. It looks like a submarine hatch. And William shuffled in with a green uniformed guard on each side, loosely holding his arms, and three following behind. His wrists were handcuffed to a waist chain. His eyes were calm behind steel framed glasses, lips set firmly above a gray beard. It looked like it would be just the nine lethal injections before it. Controlled, noiseless, practically antiseptic. With a chest like a barrel and bulging arms the size of toned thighs, Williams had to squeeze with his guards along the 7.5-foot wide chamber's glass window just to get to the side of the gurney. There, he lay down slowly, and after the guards unlocked his wrists, he helpfully spread his arms along the gurney and became still. In 2 minutes, the team had him lashed down tight, black straps with buckles at his shoulders, chest, waist, knees, and feet, and brown leather Velcro straps at his wrists. William stared straight up, and his lips moved rapidly, praying quietly. At one point, a tiny tear slid down his cheek. The three guards left, and five others walked in. It was time to insert the needles. Excuse me. Watching tensely the whole while were the 39 witnesses. They'd been marched into the witness room by a flanks of guards a few minutes before midnight and placed in a half circle around the death chamber. 11 in chairs at the window, the rest on risers against three walls. It's impossible to tell who many witnesses are, because by prison rules, nobody can move from their spot or talk, but they always consist of four groups. Supporters of the condemned man, supporters of his victims, 17 media representatives, and more than a dozen law enforcement and legal officials. In this execution, at least five were related to the four people Williams was convicted of killing. Convenience store clerk Albert Owens, 26, and motel owners Yen E. Lang, 76, Tsai Shai Chen Yang, 63, and their daughter Yi Chen Lin, 43. Prison sources said the victim witnesses were all from the Owens family. The three who shouted on their way out were led by bushy-haired Barbara Becknell, co-author of Williams's anti-gang books. Also witnessing on Williams's behalf was his attorney, Peter Fleming, and another lawyer. Nobody said a word at first. Everybody stood rigidly. The first catheter slid in messily at the crook of Williams's right elbow, taking just 2 minutes to seat, but spurting so much blood at the needle point that a cotton swab was soaked, shining deep red before it was taped off. Then came the real trouble. A medical technician, a woman with short black hair, had to poke for 11 minutes before her needle hit home. At the first stick, at 12:04, Williams clenched his toes. At 12:05, he struggled mightily against the straps holding him down to look up at the press gallery behind him, dishing out a hard stare for 6 long seconds. By 12:10 a.m., the medical tech's lips were tight, and white and sweat was pooling on her forehead as she probed his arm. "You guys doing that right?" he asked angrily, frustration clear on his face. The female guard whispered something back. It was hard to hear anything through the thick glass walls of the death chamber. One guard, jaw clenched tightly, patted Williams' shoulder as if to comfort him. Outside the chamber, Becknell stood with her two companions, a woman and a man, at the only window with a clear line of sight into Williams' eyes. And it was as if they were trying to will themselves right through the glass to stand alongside their friend. They thrust their fists up in what seemed to be a black power salute, and the man called out softly, "Tookie." They whispered, "I love you," and "God bless you," as they looked adoringly into Williams' eyes. Meanwhile, 10 feet away, Laura Owens sat stiffly, looking through the glass at the top of Williams' head. Her thick red hair never moved, and her mouth was a tight line. A blonde woman sitting next to her put her arm around her, and then removed it and clasped her hands in her lap. At 12:16 a.m., the second needle was inserted. His hands were taped, mummy-like, to the gurney arms. The guards hurried out the door and sealed it, leaving Williams alone with 2 clear intravenous lines snaking off his arms and into holes in the back wall of the death chamber. At 12:18, a female prison guard loudly read off the warrant, proclaiming that prisoner number C-29300 had been sentenced to die and, quote, "the execution shall now proceed," unquote. Williams forced his head up one last time to stare into the eyes of his 5 friends, and he kept it raised until he passed out 1.5 minutes later from the first salvo of chemicals. Sodium pentothal put him to sleep. Sorrow washed over the faces of Becknell and her female companion as his head sank and they clasped their hands in prayer. From there on in, it was a nail-biting vigil for everyone outside staring in. There was no way to know which chemicals were being administered because the plungers sending them into the intravenous tubes are pressed by unseen hands behind the chamber walls. Williams's chest heaved several times as he lay with his eyes closed, but somewhere in the 15 minutes from 12:20 to 12:35 a.m., the executioners filled his veins with pancuronium bromide to stop his breathing, then potassium chloride to stop his heart. Finally, someone behind the walls called out, "He's flatlined," and it was over. A hand shoved a paper through a peephole in the witness's room. A guard read off a quick statement affirming Williams' death, and 30 seconds later, the room was cleared. That's when the outburst happened. It was the first time since California restarted executions in 1992 that anybody had yelled or even spoken loudly during the grim procedure. And as much as anything, that is what set this execution apart. All of the other men killed by lethal injection lay so quietly on the gurney that, except for a few small moments, it was hard to tell if they were even awake. Even in the 2 gassings at San Quentin that preceded the injections, Robert Alton Harris and David Edwin Mason faced their end stoically. The witnesses, too, have never done more than mouth a few silent words and cry quietly, and the victim and prisoner advocates certainly never reacted to each other. Williams and his friends were different. It was like they were determined to get through his final minutes on Earth on their own terms, even up to the tradition of the condemned man issuing a final statement. Williams, ever defiant against the system he considered unfair, gave no final words to Warden Steve Ornowski, who said later that Williams chose instead to leave his final message with Becknell. Sources said she may reveal it at a funeral in Los Angeles next Tuesday. The main complication in the death chamber this time was the excruciatingly long wait for the poisons to work. During the last execution, when triple killer Donald Beardsley was killed in January, the actual injection process took four fewer minutes. Injections for freeway killer William Bonin required only 4 minutes in 1996, but prison officials had an explanation. He was a big man, Warden Steve Ornosky said in a post-execution briefing. Let me just say those words again. Post-execution briefing. The techs didn't have to administer extra shots of chemicals, he said. The poisons just needed time to work. It made sense. Williams was the most muscular man put to death in the modern era of executions in California, and it appeared as if his bulky body was fighting off the inevitable, even after consciousness and the ability to move had fled. This was not a man who went meekly. And that was Stanley Tookie Williams, who was executed or state sanctioned murdered earlier this week. I'm stuck on I believe it's 11 minutes. Or he was poked. Yeah. A medical technician had to poke for 11 minutes before her needle hit home. Just imagine that. I mean, I've had blood taken a bunch of times, but, you know, and I've had idiots, you know, like going, okay, where? No, it's not. Oh, ow, fuck. Oh, ah, no, I hate you. I've had that happen when, you know, just for like normal blood draws. But this man is getting murdered and has known that for a very, very long time. And there's this bitch in there who's just like, oh, oops, And from some reports, from this one, it said that he replied rudely to something or angrily to something, which, if there's any time to be angry, I think it's when people are going to be killing you and they're doing it wrong. What's worse than being killed, being murdered by the state, is being murdered incorrectly or incompetently. There's dignity in death, okay, sure, whatever. Again, I'm phrasing it as a state-sanctioned murder, and... you know, some people deserve to live, some people deserve to die. All the pro-lifers, not all the pro-lifers say, but a hell of a lot of them do. And isn't that just nice? And just, it warms your heart on this good Christmas season. I just love thinking about stuff like that. I think it's entirely appropriate to kill a man. And these anti-gang books, which he wrote while he was in prison with a co-writer as well, there were children's books, and there were lots of celebrities and such. Snoop Dogg and Jamie Foxx were two of them who were saying, like, this man has affected people. He has stopped, he has changed the paths of so many people's lives who would have gone into this life of murder and gangs and such. And he's helped to stop that. And he could have kept doing that while in prison for the rest of his life. But no, they got to kill him. And I think he made some mistakes because with most of these things, again, you can't take back a murder. You can't go, oh, you're acquitted of that crime which we killed you for. Yeah, so come back, as Richard Pryor said earlier in this broadcast. You can't survive death, at least in that sense. You can definitely survive death through your works, and Tookie Williams and Richard Pryor are definitely two men who have done that. But Stanley Tookie Williams, he professed his innocence, And this was a main, quote unquote, problem which Schwarzenegger and various others had with granting clemency or granting a stay in the execution, because he did not admit to the crimes that he was convicted of, and that he did not apologize or show remorse of any kind. Emily can't go. Where? Don't. Okay.
You made me really depressed.
I made you really depressed. Okay. Oh, great.
Richard Pryor, and now we're talking about icky needles in the arm.
I'm sorry that it made you depressed, because this season is so unusual for depression in the first place.
I know, I never get depressed.
No, no one ever gets depressed during... Yeah, but see, the thing is, it's like, reasons, I mean, I love you, Emily, but but there are so many reasons why people don't pay attention to current events or politics, oh my god, or anything of the sort, and okay, if you're gonna talk in the microphone. There are two of them in this room. We're wasting precious air time here.
Sorry.
I have another viewer, listener, person. It might be Richard Deutsch, I don't know. He listens to the show. Or maybe it's John McCain. It could be John McCain. I gave... Bye, Emily. Barton, that little brief break. Now I'm alone. You can call, by the way. The phone number's on the screen or in your little chat window if you're listening to this live. Anyways, yeah, there's so many reasons why like people just don't follow stuff. And like, it's depressing is one of it. It's confusing. It's frustrating. It's... Again, the two things which you don't talk about, religion and politics. Two things that I've been covering constantly on this show, even in terms of like the comedy bits which I've been playing from various people, religion and politics. Frankly, because I'm just learning right now how to talk about it, because people say you don't talk about those things. And if you don't talk about it, then you don't learn how to discuss it or how to have any kind of debate. Or you wait until high school to take debate class or extracurricular activities. And even at that point, it can get so confusing that you just, I'd rather do the acting solo parts instead, because that's a fantasy world that I can understand better than I can. I mean, there are probably more people who understand Lord of the Friggin' Rings and the mythology and history around all of that than who... Go in and understand politics. And it's going to stay that way for a very, very long time. And I think it's even more prevalent with my generation. But when I say my generation, I just kind of mean I'm so not Generation Y. I'm 26, but I'm not Generation Y. I like to kind of reach out and cling to Generation X because I relate a lot more. I don't know. I liked Reality Bites when I was a kid. But I'm so not Generation Y. Oh, my God. But I think it's much more prevalent with those. And I've now, like, gone over so many different things. So, again, that was that last depressing but true bit. You know, if it's depressing, change it. I went through another like major depression this semester, which I'm really open about, and just, you know, like, hey, everybody, here's, you know, go to cathedral counseling because they rock and they helped me. And I'm feeling less depressed, which is nice. Only for Christmas to come so I can get more depressed by going home. If my dad's listening, I didn't mean that about that home. But if you're depressed, change something. When I got depressed, you know what? I kept going, and I kept trying to change things, to make changes, to find ways to cope, to try to confront the issue while surviving. So if it's depressing, change it. And that's part of why I've been... Oh, I just messed with the cable. That's part of the reason that I've been doing this show in spite of, you know, not really getting any support in a number of ways, but I don't think that the station freeradio.saic.org gets much support in the least bit, certainly from our school, I believe. If I'm wrong, prove it. But, you know, because being able to understand it is the first step to being able to change it. And I'm not happy, but I'm just not going to, like, my only action isn't going to be putting a button on my bag and have that be my statement to the world. I'm going to try to understand, and I'm not going to take someone else's little opinion from opinion commentators on Fox News or even from Air America and just regurgitate those over and over and over again like a fucking cow. I'm not going to do that, because that too is just as ridiculously stupid as what everyone talks about the Republicans and conservatives and neocons and whatever. It's the same fucking thing. And that's what I hate. I hate people. I so, so much hate the fact that liberals, progressives, Democrats, what have you, just regular, you know, people who are on that side, not the politicians and such, because that's a completely different, more complicated issue, that they bitch about these things, that they stereotype the right and the right's populace as much as the right stereotyped them. They're each proving the other stereotype. It's a vicious circle. And you're not going to be able to stop it unless you try to understand. Which makes you think of what I mentioned earlier about the book Don't Think of an Elephant. Because in that he talks about, you know, understanding what the other side is talking about. And also in the documentary The Fog of War, featuring Robert McNamara, who was the Department of Defense during Vietnam, and also president of the World Bank, which is another big issue that people of my generation like to throw fits over. And I don't understand it, so I'm not going to talk about it, because I'm smart enough to say that I don't know something and that I don't know everything. And I'm smart enough to shut up when I don't know about something and to therefore try to learn about it. But in The Fog of War, one of Robert McNamara's various rules or lessons, which he's teaching in the structure of this documentary by Errol Morris, who does fantastic documentaries. It's incredibly, watch them. They're just incredibly just intriguing and inviting, and it pulls you in. But one of his rules is to empathize with your enemy and to understand why they think that way. And that's always been my opinion throughout my entire life when it comes to someone who has an opposite viewpoint to me. From politics to, I don't know, to why I should at work clean that counter instead of staying at my desk or something, like at some other job. It's like, okay, I don't agree with that position, but I want to understand why you think that way. And if I understand the reasoning, if I know there's a reasoning for it, then I'm cool. If not, fuck it. Because I'm not going to do something if there's no logical reason for you telling me to or for me doing it at all. And that's what I don't think a lot of people understand. And I think that's why a lot of those people also get frustrated with politics and therefore just ditch it completely. And I'm going to continue this. I met John McCain at Senator John McCain, the senator from Arizona, a very distinguished soldier and senator and kind of centrist. A Republican that Democrats can mostly like. He was at Borders, as I announced last week, to the two people that were both me that were listening. He was at Borders last Thursday for a discussion and a signing. And I went there with the book that I bought of his, which I have yet to read, and the copy of Newsweek that he was on the cover of that was discussing his ban on torture amendment, which is attached onto the, I believe, the military appropriations spending budget bill thing. And I also brought a free radio SAIC.org schedule with candy canes on it to gift to him because I'm ballsy, I guess. And I had, you know, I like to bring gifts to people who I meet who are kind of famous or who, you know, I gave Vince Vaughn like a bag full of candy that I give out during holidays and such when he was shooting Maid in New York, and I ran and like my friend and I were walking like, oh look, there's Vince Vaughn. I happen to have an Easter bag in my pocket. Here you go, Vince Vaughn. Enjoy the candy. High five users, please stay. Talk amongst yourselves. And so John McCain spoke, wonderful speaker. He's also a politician. And I was ballsy enough to stand up and to ask him a question, and not like the people who are, I don't know if I'm going to ask him a question, so I'm going to wait till he says the questions are over and then go, oh, hear me, pick me. It's like the third or fourth question. And so I stood up, and I hadn't planned on it or anything. And I said, I'm a young person who is involved in politics, which is a rarity. And there's something that I've, and this is a really vague interpretation of what I actually asked, I'm sure. And one thing that I've been frustrated with is I've read many books, many liberal books or what have you, read so many different newspapers, listened to pundits, and I can't find the truth. The one thing that listening to all of those people has proven to me is that I don't think the truth exists at all. So where can I find that? Please tell me where I can find the truth. Thank you and good night. And so he, as Robert McNamara says, you don't answer the question which is asked of you. You ask the question that you wish had been asked of you. And so John McCain, first of all, he thanked me for being involved in politics, which still just kind of like makes me stop and go, what? John McCain just thanked me. Holy crap. Okay. Getting back to the point. Okay. Critical eye. And he repeated the question to the masses that were waiting. And then he said that he reads various papers on, you know, the liberal side, on the conservative side, on whichever side is there. And, you know, and with the internet, who knows what can happen? And that was basically it. So he didn't answer my question. He said that I should read both sides. Basically, I should do a mathematical equation with this is what the truth is over here and this is what the truth is over there. Let's do the average of those two. That's the truth. And so when I got into the line to have him sign crap, I followed up. Why? Because I am ballsy. Or breasty, because there has to be, you know, they're round. So round breasts. There you go. I think she'd be breasty. Something else. And so I followed up and I asked him, like, you know, I understand that. And that's what, you know, I have done, but where is the truth? Does it exist somewhere? And he said, well, that's why you're a responsible young adult. So you can make that decision for yourself. And he said it in this slightly sarcastic tone, which kind of like stalled me for the entire day. Because I'm like, did John McCain just insult me? I mean, he has every right to, but did he just insult me in this like sarcastic father kind of way? Okay. And so he said that, and I said, well, yes, but shouldn't the truth be objective? Shouldn't there, you know, shouldn't it exist outside of these opinions? And he didn't really have an answer. You can read more of that, or read that entire story and see the picture of me shaking John McCain's hand at the blog that goes along with this show, mtoutburst.blogspot.com. That is the letters MT, the abbreviation for Montana, not empty. And I had this whole thing. I'm going to play part of this. I was doing laundry. I forget what day, maybe Monday. And I was doing laundry in 162 North State Street. And I turned on CNN there because I constantly watch CNN or listen to it or read the subtitles. I do something with CNN like every moment of the day. And I was in there to get my laundry. And I looked up to the TV, which was still on. And Sam Cedar he's a comedian who hosts or co-hosts, but he mostly hosts the Majority Report on Air America. And he was talking. And I just was like, what? And so I taped it, or I recorded the audio, thanks to Crooks and Liars. I'm gonna play this in the background.
Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays, a Christmas tree or a holiday tree?
Yeah, so this is on CNN.
Depends on whom you ask. We've seen controversy, most notably prompted by the White House. It sent out cards, this card, matter of fact, wishing a holiday season of hope and happiness. No mention of Christmas. Some thoughts now on the subject. Sam Teeter hosts the show Majority Report on Air America Radio. Bob Knight is the director of the Culture and Family Institute. It's affiliated with the Christian conservative organization Concerned Women for America.
Okay, just for that, it's this guy, Bob Knight, speaking on behalf of, basically on like Concerned Women of America. If organizations were part of a family tree, it would go back to whatever this Concerned Families or whatever. It would go back to Concerned Women. So here's this guy speaking on behalf of women.
Gentlemen, great to have you with me.
Thanks for having us on.
All right, well, let's start with the holiday card. What do you think, Sam?
Well, listen, you know, as far as the war on Christmas goes, I feel like we should be waging a war on Christmas. I mean, I believe that Christmas, it's almost proven that Christmas has nuclear weapons, can be an imminent threat to this country, that they have operative ties with terrorists. And I believe that we should sacrifice thousands of American lives in pursuit of this war on Christmas.
So that's how Sam Cedar is approaching this. Which I think is fantastic. I've been trying to think in my brain again on the issue of reframing debates or reframing issues of a different way to say this war on Christmas, because it's become incredibly catchy. And I've turned off so many programs or radio shows that once they've started to discuss this war on Christmas as a serious matter, I'm just like, oh, no, fuck off. Because it's ridiculous, because it doesn't exist. And don't let that little bitch elf in my hole at home tell you any different. Because I don't care how cold it gets in that hole, but that elf is going to stay there until he tells me what I want to know. Continuing.
And hundreds of billions of dollars of taxpayer money.
Well, Sam, is it a war on Christmas, a war on Christians, a war on over political correctness, or just a lot of people with way too much time on their hands?
Well, I would say probably, if I was to be serious about it, too much time on their hands. But I'd like to get back to the operational ties between Santa Claus and Al-Qaeda.
I don't think that exists. Bob?
Well, we have
help me out here.
Okay, a reporter actually said, I don't think that exists. Where were those comments earlier in this whole war? The actual war that's going on instead of this fictional war? And I don't see the creepy guy who's who always kind of scares me because he's so quiet, who comes in after me. So I'm going to continue playing this.
We have intelligence.
Intelligence. You have intel. And where exactly does your intel come from?
Well, we have tortured an elf. And that's it's actually how we got the same information from Al Labie. It's exactly the same way the Bush administration got this info about the operational ties between Al-Qaeda and Saddam.
Okay, Bob Knight. Sam is tying in now the lack of information regarding weapons of mass destruction. And
I'm going to go and now explain the entire joke, which he's doing, so that you can now get back to the serious conversation which you want to have. And also because explaining jokes always makes it funnier.
Somehow moving that into Santa Claus. Help me out here. What's going on? I mean, is this a war on Christians, a war on Christmas? Is this too much political correctness?
Yeah, it was first I want to compliment him on his dry humor, but this is actually a very serious subject because a lot of people are waking up to realize that the war on Christmas is really the culmination of a war on faith. And the idea that the public square has to be cleansed of any religious expression, particularly...
Cleansed? That frames it in an even more religious, conservative frame, by the way.
Particularly Christian religious expression. You know, at one time, Happy Holidays was a welcome addition to Merry Christmas. So you wouldn't say the same thing over and over again. But a lot of people now see it as a substitute. And it's very gratuitous at times. And it's actually insulting when you're talking about Christmas Day or a Christmas tree, and you can't bring yourself to use the word for fear of offending someone. In the name of diversity, we're a less free country when that happens.
It's interesting, Sam, because, I mean, this is a time
where... No, it's not interesting.
If anything, we want to be even more sensitive to diversity, considering everything that's happening with regard to war on terror. We're learning so much more about different religions, different ethnicities, and trying to become more of one versus being segregated.
Yeah, well, Kara, I mean, listen, I would like Bob to tell me who is the person who has been offended by someone saying Merry Christmas to them. I've never met that person. I don't celebrate Christmas. But if someone says Merry Christmas to me and... I either think, well, it's a little bit odd. It's like me saying happy birthday to you on my birthday. But, no one cares. But I'll tell you this. As we wage the war on the war on the war on the war on Christmas on our radio show, News Corp, Fox News, those people who have started this entire war on Christmas meme, fake war, they're having a holiday party. President Bush saying happy holidays. Tokyo Rose, Laura Bush, saying happy holidays to her dogs in the video. I'm sure you've seen it. I mean, these are the things that we should be talking about when we are waging this war in Iraq. We should be equating it to the war on Christmas. What else would Bob Knight have an opportunity to do? How else would he get on television if he wasn't pretending to be attacked?
You know, this would be funny, except it is serious to a lot of people who have seen their faith cleansed from the public square.
Again, cleansed.
Well, are you suggesting, Bob?
Also, this cleansing comes in at the end.
Bob, that someone can't celebrate Christmas in America? I mean, tell me about the person who can escape these
celebrations. Get a word in here.
Go ahead, Bob.
I'm talking about things like in Ridgeway, Wisconsin, where the school children in the public school were told they couldn't sing Silent Night. So they substituted O Cold Night. You know, I think when you take Jesus out of anything, it gets pretty cold, so it's apt. But it's outrageous. Oh. They have children actually singing a bastardized version of Silent Night.
Well, Bob, you see, this Christmas may come as a shock to you, Bob.
Holiday trees.
But I don't consider Jesus the Messiah. And so if you're going to ask me to praise Jesus, I'm going to be a little offended.
And that comes from the whole, when Jesus is left out of things, it gets pretty cold, which, you know, you can take that. It's speaking directly to Christian conservatives, and the fact that they have this on CNN and on other stations besides fucking O'Reilly on Fox and the Daily Show last night making fun of it. I'm going to skip later onto this because it's hit 7:01, so technically this is not my time slot, but the next guy isn't here, so fuck it. I'm going to skip later into this bit. So let's see.
I'd like
and
to
I think you know that's the truth.
Bob, I got to let you have the final thought, Bob.
Okay. You know, when the Nazis moved into Austria in
1936... Oh, that is offensive, Bob.
They immediately...
To raise Nazis.
Okay, I'm going to... Let's play that again.
Problem with it, you don't care about the people who don't celebrate Christmas.
Oh, that's a little far.
Fine. But I don't celebrate Christmas, and I don't care. So why are we wasting everybody's time? It's so that you can fundraise. That's why, Bob.
I'd like
and
to
I
put
think
this
you know
in perspective.
Bob, I gotta let you have the final thought, Bob.
Okay. You know, when the Nazis moved into Austria in
1936... Oh, that is offensive, Bob.
They immediately
to raise
removed
Nazis
from the schools.
That
you
is
read
a,
about it.
Hold on,
so
hold on.
Security.
Let Bob. Hold on, Sam. Let Bob make his point. Let Bob make his point. Go ahead, Bob.
Me banging my head on the table.
Maria Trapp wrote the story of the Trapp Singers. That's in The Sound of Music. And she said she sent her kids to school after the Nazis took over, and they came home and said, Mama, we can't say the word Christmas anymore. It's now winter holiday. I think that ought to disturb people.
Kara,
that we're
that's
moving
offensive.
Toward that kind of attitude in this country.
The Puritans also outlawed Christmas. The founding fathers of this country would fine you in Massachusetts if you celebrated Christmas at the beginning. So don't talk about Nazis, Bob. I think that's really inappropriate. Why do you have to bring
to
hate to this Christmas and holiday season?
Frost.
That's so sad, Bob.
Well, it's the
so
truth.
Sad.
You ought to read the book yourself.
Well, Bob, it's just sad that you have to raise Nazis when you're talking about Christmas and the holiday season. And we all know that Christmas actually, Tannenbaum, it's a German holiday. Bob, I'm really, really disappointed in you.
I'm sorry to disappoint you, but if you can't understand the force of history...
To bring up
I'm
Nazis, Bob?
I'm not calling
you a Nazi. Oh, who are you calling a Nazi?
Gentlemen,
who are you calling a Nazi,
we got to let it there.
I'm not.
We could probably continue.
You are, sir.
Sam Cedar.
I'm offended.
Air America Radio.
Very much offended.
Bob Knight, Director of Culture and Family Institute. Gentlemen... Obviously, hey, it's a discussion. Everyone's talking about it. That is for sure. A lot of people are talking about
there
it, I should say.
Yes.
Now, I'm just curious. Do I say Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah?
I'd like to say Merry Christmas.
Don't cut and run from the war on Christmas.
Thanks, gentlemen. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. Okay, first of all, towards the end when Sam Cedar keeps saying, sir... That's why I can't listen to him. I really can't listen to the majority report on Air America. There's like a point that Sam Cedar gets to where I'm just like, no, can't function, must turn off. No, it's the reason why I don't like talk radio as I'm doing a talk radio show. It's 7:04. You're listening to freeradioseic.org. Ladies' night at the Ortho Lounge should be going on right now. So if you've tuned in for the ladies' night at the Ortho Lounge, this is not it. But hopefully it will be coming shortly. Because it's 7:00. And normally someone gets a sub if they're going to be gone. So I'm just going to keep going. Like I said. Because I have more information this week than other weeks. So, yeah. He uses the Nazi card. I told you cleansing would become important later on in the discussion. Playing the Nazi card is what... a high schooler or a grade schooler does when they're having an argument. When they've been grounded and they're going off into the room in a huff. You guys are like Nazis. Oh my God. You guys are just being Nazis. That's playing the Nazi card. Because there's nothing which the person can say except for like, no, you're being ridiculous. What are you talking about? You can't go, Nazis aren't that bad. Sorry. You can't do anything after that. So you play the Nazi card and it's like going, ha ha ha, you can't attack me anymore. And that's what he does at the very end. And he sets it up, probably not, well, I don't know, probably consciously, with using these phrases like cleansing. Because what do we think of with cleansing? Well, you know, there are detergents and such, but cleansing, ethnic cleansing. Ethnic cleansing?
Concentration camps. Doesn't take very long. Concentration camps? Nazis! Ah, there you go. And so apparently the 4% of the country that is not Christian, which in theory I'm unfortunately using their percentages, their stats. The 4% of the country that is not Christian is attacking the 96% that is. And so we must fight back. But I'm telling you, that elf, waterboarding. That's all I'm going to say, waterboarding. Oh yeah, he's going down. You know, Donald Rumsfeld has taught me a little bit over these few years. And it's not torture. No, it's not torture. Torture is a frame, which implies that it would be bad. The phrase to use if you're pro-torture is cruel and unusual, or cruel and endangering or aggressive interrogation tactics. Something like that. It's not saying the word torture. You above all do not say the word torture. That's why John McCain and the ban on torture are so connected. Ugh. But yeah, that it stopped watching Sam Cedar and hearing him talk about that. It stopped me dead in my tracks in the laundry room. And I just stared up and started laughing because it's the one example that I can say that where they started talking about this war on Christmas and I didn't turn it off because there was someone actually saying, this is a non-story. This doesn't exist. What the fuck are you talking about? Like, there's so much other important issues to be discussing. And you just picked this up from Fox News, who's been covering it like crazy, and stop. And so I applaud Sam Cedar for that. Also because he backs Marc Maron, who's on Morning's Edition, which is in its last throes this week. Morning's Edition's last broadcast, just the name, Morning's Edition. Morning Edition on NPR, Morning's Edition. It's fantastic. It's a great show that I've loved for a really long time and that I actually visited their studios and was there during a broadcast, during the October 25th broadcast. Or August 25th broadcast. How do I know that? Because I still have it recorded on my iTunes so that I can listen to myself on national radio. Because I am egotistical. There's a part of me that's egotistical. But they're great. And they're being canceled. Their last show is Friday. I took pictures while I was there, and I've been painting them in a kind of an art therapy experiment, and I just mailed off the one that I have determined that I should give to Marc Maron, since he's the main guy who's being pushed over. What they're going to do is take away Morning's Edition. How things have been going is there's the Rachel Maddow show, which is an hour from 5 to 6 in the morning, and then there's 3 hours of Morning's Edition from 6 until 9. And what they're going to do is break that up equally, and there's going to be Mark Riley, who is currently the co-host of Morning's Edition, from 5 until 7, and then Rachel Maddow is going to get pushed back or pushed up to her, I think, her old time slot when Unfiltered was on, from 7 until 9. And so she's going to be expanded to 2 hours, which is great. I mean, she has a great show, and it's compact, and it's perfect. It's like a perfect like news pill to take in the morning. It's absolutely great. The Rachel Maddow show. You can check it out. Check out, it's all archived at airamericaplace.com. Again, not Air America Radio, but airamericaplace.com. And you can even listen to old Unfiltered episodes. But, you know, it's great and it's wonderful, but I can't listen to Mark Riley by himself. I don't know what they're going to do. And, you know, the great thing that I liked about Morning's Edition and that, you know, kind of brought me into this show itself, into doing it and what, you know, I'm trying to make it, is the comedy aspect of it. And also the willingness to go, I don't know what's going on with this. tell me. Like, I don't know. Advise me. Have me learn. Which is what Marc Maron was, like, a big part of. And also, you know, having, like, personal confessions and... It's carried me through this entire semester and all last summer. And I'm going to severely, severely miss it. What I have been kind of pushed into now is the Stephanie Miller Show. And AirAmericaPlace.com, which is the unofficial blog of Air America fans, it's also the unofficial blog of Stephanie Miller, of the Stephanie Miller Show, and their listeners. And so the past couple days I've been listening to that, and I've been going on the blog and talking to people, and it seems it's not Morning Sedition, but it's the closest I think I'm going to get. So again, you can check that out at airamericaplace.com, or else for Stephanie Miller stuff, you can go and do a search for Stephanie Miller on Google. All right. Well, it's 7:12. The next guy's not here. No, he's not. I don't know what to do. Now I know what to do. I got a final song, and then I'll, you know, make a copy of this, and then I'll go home and watch Lost or Veronica Mars, something. I don't know. This has been In the Loop. This is the last broadcast of the semester. School ends after this week, and so we will not be airing anything until time slots and whatever get shifted and what have you, and start it up for next semester. I don't know when it starts again, but I don't know. Keep checking. Because I'm insistent about getting attention, I'm going to continue to be posting things on my blog and as podcasts. So do kind of podcast editions of this show, In the Loop, on my podcast page, which you can first find by going to the blog, which is, again, the letter T, outburst.blogspot.com. And you can find a link on there to my podcast page, which is kbarrick.podomatic.com. On there, you don't have to know anything about podcasting. You don't have to know what an iPod is. You don't have to own an iPod. All you need is to have speakers and a computer and a finger. Fingers help with these things. That's all you have to have. You can go on there and you can download individual audio clips. Again, kbarrick.podomatic.com. Go on there and you'll see individual releases or shows or what have you of mine, and you can just press play. And the more that you go to that page and the more that you get others to go to my page, the higher I go up in the ranks of the Podomatic thing. And there's like some like recovering gay podcasts that I've seen moving up the ranks, and I really don't want that guy to beat me because that would be really strange. I don't know. They're like a bunch of God podcasts, and yay, but they're just kind of scary, like a recovering gay. That's, I think, what it's called. So I don't know. Get all your friends, go over to kbarrick.podomatic.com. And if you're listening to this on the podcast, you've already done it. So thank you. You can also find my podcast on iTunes. My picture's on there too, I think. You can go on iTunes and do a search for Embarrassing Outbursts, or do a search for Adam Curry, because the full name of the podcast is Embarrassing Outbursts. I am not Adam Curry. Why is it named that? Well, with the Adam Curry part, it's to try to siphon off people who do searches for Adam Curry. Same reason that some of my blog postings have been naked pictures. And then I post a picture of Kiefer Sutherland, like a screenshot from 24, where he has no shirt on and is pointing a gun to try to lure people in. Oh. All right. Thank you for listening. Thank you so much. I appreciate it immensely. It's nice when people listen. Please help freeradiosaic.org. Get your friends to listen. Go to the website. Talk to fellow students. Talk to fellow family members, what have you, and get people to listen to this site. If there are any students listening, putting the show on here is easy. You don't have to have a talking one like me and do all that kind of crap. You can come in with a playlist, with CDs, with your iPod, and just go from there. Next semester, I'm going to have this show, and I'm hopefully going to put together a comedy show that will feature mostly comedy bits and some comedy songs. Whenever I say that, I think of Dr. Demento, and so, but I really don't want to compare it to that. So there. So I'll just say that and have it be. So please keep an eye out for that. And again, please support freeradiosaic.org. Love us. We need your love. We need attention. You know how much money we put into the school? Hell of a lot. So we should get something back. You know, a little love here. I'm going to end this with another Christmas song. Again, if there's a war on Christmas, Christmas is winning. And I am dreading going home so much. And so I, instead of, you know, hearing the Charlie Brown Christmas theme, like, for the 100th time, or Santa Got Run Over by a Reindeer, or whatever that song is, you know, I got some little R&B. This is Christmas Wish, a.k.a. My Christmas Wish for You, by Percy Sledge, off of R&B Christmas Volume 3. You can find those at your local record store, or you can also download partial albums on iTunes. So thank you guys for listening, and please go to the blog, go to the podcast page, go to the program news page here at freeradiosaic.org to find out more information about when the show will come back on the air, when all of our shows will come back on the air. And have a good holidays. And I'm going to keep posting stuff because I'm really dreading this holiday. So if you feel like trying to survive with me, again, please stay tuned to the podcast and to the blog. I thank you all so much, and we're going to take it out. Oh, I just closed the little window. Okay. I was so smooth there for a second. And then I lost it. Again, if you were tuning in to hear Ladies Night at the Ortho Lounge, I don't know where he is. So this is the end of In the Loop. Again, we'll be back next semester. Thank you all very much. And I'm going to leave you with a little Percy Sledge.
A warm fire to keep you from the winter wind. A happy home to share your laughter in. Sleepy heads for you to tuck in bed. A Santa Claus that can do all he says.